What is happening? Welcome to another episode of the On the Corner podcast, the official pitcherlist.com podcast. My name is Nick Pollock, and today I get to be host with Eric Smolsky here. Eric, it's so good to see you.
You too, Nick. Always good to see you. It's a crisp fall day here in New York. The times, they are changing. It's a beautiful World Series weather.
They are changing because it is off season, but as you know, there is no off season. And if you have listened to this podcast for a long time, you know that what we do as a staff is we go over, I should say really as a team, we go over our 2026 mock draft right away. We do this within the first couple weeks of the off season, sometimes the first week or so. And we have one this year that is across all of the podcast networks. So you're not going to hear the interview with me. As you might have in previous years, you're gonna hear some of them. Eno and I will talk about it. Eric obviously is here. Nate Schwartz and Kyle Bland will be here. However, all the other ones are going to be on the respective podcasts in the Pen, on the Wire, Keeper Cut, Hacks and Jacks, This Week in Fantasy Baseball, and Wins Above Fantasy. You can check out all of those mock draft and reviews there for those participants. And I highly recommend it because it's the quickest way to get analysis on 276 players who will not be repeated. They won't be repeated. I know they're players, not pitchers. It's really tough, Eric.
It's tough. You have to talk about hitters.
So today, though, we're going to do Eric Smolsky's team. And Eric, I'm really excited about this. It's 23 rounds, everybody. It is as if it's a Yahoo format, 5x5 wins and no quality starts. We likely will change this sometime in the future, but as of right now, that's still very much the standard. That means no middle infield, no corner infield, Eric. Not five outfielders, three of them, two utilities. And Shohei Ohtani is separate. That is, he is a DH, and then he's also a starting pitcher. He's not a two-way player in this format. So with all of this in mind, Eric Smolsky had the seventh slot in this draft. Why'd you have the seventh slot, Eric?
Well, I saw you picked six, and I said, I'm going to pick right after Nick. And
there you go.
And that was it.
It works both ways because there are certain times I made a pick that I kind of felt like I was going to be sniping you, and you certainly made a pick or two knowing that you would snipe me.
Yeah.
And after you did this draft, did you feel differently about that spot? And if you had the chance to take any draft spot, would you still be taking the seventh?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I will just say, you know, what we also did for Roto World, we did a mock, and I also wound up with Ellie De La Cruz as my first round pick, who I took here as my first round pick. In that draft, I had the sixth pick. I went back, you know, one spot. I thought maybe I wouldn't get him. I don't love the middle of the first round. I feel like there's a lot of, like, I don't really know who comes after, you know, Ohtani, Judge, Soto, Witt seem very much like a clear top four to me as we sit here in October. And then Jose Ramirez, probably five. You start making a case for a lot of different people. And then I just kind of think, like, if I'm not picking at the top, I may want to wait to be closer to the turn and, you know, see which outfielder falls to me. There are some fun picks on one of the teams I'll talk about later that I like, that I think, you know, I could have been in a spot to get some of those players now, seeing how the draft board falls, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the same page as you. me being a pitching guy, I had to just take chances on hitters and be like, yes, I can get a sense of who the number six would be. And of course, you're saying, Nick, it should be Ellie De La Cruz. Nick, you didn't do that. You took Junior Caminero. Gasp. Oh my gosh, you took Junior Caminero sixth overall. I don't know. The guy hit 49 home runs and probably 35-40 because it's not in Georgetown Brenner Field anymore. But there you go. I want four category production. I don't want five necessarily because I don't think stolen bases are as important as it is in your main event roto leagues. If it's head to head, you can absolutely get by without Ellie De La Cruz, and you can have the stability, the more consistent things like home runs, runs, and RBI, and actually average two with Caminero. So I look back and I'm like, Ronald Acuna Jr. probably would do, maybe Corbin Carroll. I don't know, but I'm with you that the initial picks definitely, like, I want to be in the top two. Then of course, top five, and then probably 10, 11, 12.
Yeah. The head to head aspect of it changes a lot. And I will admit that there were some picks where afterwards I was like, right, it's not Roto, it's head to head. And I may have done some things a little bit differently had I remembered that all the time.
So second round comes. It's Jackson Churio for you. And what's your thought process here? I mean, is there a certain approach that you're having with your draft philosophy of cool shortstop, and then I want to get all the infield positions or an outfielder? What are you thinking going into this?
I'm just thinking hitters early, quite frankly. I'm going to take hitters the first three, four, maybe even five rounds, depending on the size of the draft. Again, this was like a maybe need to reprogram my brain thing, because I'm used to four or five outfielder drafts where you really do need to get an outfielder in one of your first two picks, because you're trying to fill four or five outfield spots. And a lot of those guys, the elite guys are gone. And then you wind up getting a bunch of question marks or a bunch of like middle tier guys, and, you know, really having to fill up an entire outfield of guys that you're not getting elite production from. So we had six outfielders go in the first round. Then Kyle Tucker went before me. So seven outfielders had already gone. I was looking at the outfielders afterwards. To me, Churio hands down has the most upside of the ones that were left. And frankly, probably more than like Kyle Tucker and maybe even Tatis Jr. at this point in their careers. And so it was just a bet on a young player who'll be in his third year, who I think will take a step forward at a position where I think I could still get elite talent at that position, and wanted to get elite talent at that position.
Yeah, sure.
So we'll mature you.
Yeah. Third round is Manny Machado. And this is something that really spurred me to do Junior Caminero, where it's Jose Ramirez is a number one third baseman. And that's why I think he should be fifth. And then I thought to myself, okay, it's clearly Caminero as number two. And then I think I underrated the second half of Manny Machado, even though I had him rostered in one of my leagues. And do you think there's a big gap between Caminero and Machado, and then also a big gap between Machado and future guys? As I also bring up the draft board, if you're watching on YouTube right now on the On the Corner podcast YouTube channel, you will see the full draft board, especially if you squint. So you can follow along with us here. And Manny Machado, third round. Tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, so Machado finished as the fourth third baseman on the FanGraphs player rater. Eugenio Suarez was third. 49 homers will do that for you. You know, he's a free agent. We don't know where he's gonna go. I actually have Machado behind Jazz Chisholm in third base rankings. If you're in a league where Jazz is third base eligible, as he should be pretty much everywhere. And so for me, Machado is the fourth third baseman right now, heading into next year, 2026. There's an argument for Austin Riley above him. If you look at like the batted ball data, Austin Riley still was hitting the ball exceptionally hard last year. And I think people said, hey, he was bad in 2024, and then he was hurt and not good in 2025. And so Austin Riley is on the decline. And I don't really know that's the case. And I don't know who's Haxen Jacks.
Oh, that's Scott Chu and Brett Ford.
Scott getting Austin Riley in the seventh round is a tremendous
pick. That is an FSWA nominated podcast.
Yeah. I mean, Scott, I've met Scott a few times. Scott's great.
Of course.
So the Austin Riley pick is great. But for me, it was just like, yeah, it's consistent production from Machado. And there's Devers had already gone. Jazz Chisholm is third base
eligible. Actually, I was meaning to check this because he wasn't at the beginning. But they're right, because then
he's
like in the Giants, I guess. For a second.
That's actually a really good call because.
Oh, thank you. I know a thing maybe about hitters, but let me double check right now for eligibility. He played one game at third base, but 29 at
only one game. So he is not
first base eligible for next year.
So after Machado, you get to this really weird point. Like I'm writing an article right now for Roto World that will come out later this week on the third base position next year. And this past season, only seven third basemen earned $10 of value according to the Fangraphs player rater. That's, there were 17 first basemen that did. Yeah. There were 15 shortstops that did. There were 13 catchers that did. There were 8 second basemen that did. So theoretically, or if you go just by that, third base is the shallowest, worst position in fantasy. Obviously, you have to account for there are guys who were injured this year who would normally get $10 worth of value, like Alex Bregman, Austin Riley, Isak Paredes, Matt Chapman, Max Muncy. And so maybe third baseman isn't that shallow. But I just felt like I couldn't really keep waiting and wind up with, you know, I didn't really want to wind up with Matt Chapman and Isak Paredes, even though I don't mind them. I just felt like Machado is steady and consistent and he's always going to produce. And
right,
let's go for it.
Yeah, you're not going to regret that pick.
No.
You know, it'd be really difficult to have a season where Machado is just so much worse than all those other options. And really, you're going to hear me say this in all of these. It's second base and third base this year. You know, you got to have a plan. You just got to know what it is. And it's not a plan that says I am getting a guy in the first four rounds on that position. It's just when you don't get those, who are the ones that you're going to get instead? And one of the things actually was second base for me. We're going to actually tackle that one for you now. It's Bryce Terang. And Bryce Terang for me was, I considered if I wanted to do that in the third round, because you have Ketel Marte going, and I just think, oh, I saw Ketel Marte go, and I was so hoping that he was injured enough that he wouldn't get picked that early. To me, he's become just a massive target for me because it's just such a big gap, personally. Yeah. And Terang is not there. He's not at the Marte level. I don't believe Betts has second base left. Maybe he still does.
He does.
And so Terang was the best second baseman remaining. However, if you look at that in a vacuum, it does not look like a fourth rounder.
Yeah, I mean, I guess again, this is a little bit of the difference between head-to-head and roto. Oh, no, no.
Don't take me wrong, Eric. I'm not saying it's not a good pick. I'm saying it's a good pick because it's second base.
Yeah.
But if this were relative to everybody else, like, wait, really? This is fourth round.
But I still am thinking, I don't really know that I love this pick because you are pushing up a player, or I will say because I made the pick. I pushed up a player that I probably wouldn't draft in the fourth round because the position is weak. However, obviously there were gains, improvements for Bryce Terang. I mean, 18 homers, I don't know that anybody expected. A 7.9% barrel rate. So the homers were earned a little bit. 91.1 mile an hour average exit velocity, 111.2 max exit velocity. He very clearly made an approach change to hit for more power. Wildly, like, not pulling the ball more. Like, not, it wasn't like a pull side power thing. It was just, and also I'm looking right now too, like, his swing rates are pretty much exactly the same. He didn't chase a lot. He made less contact overall by significant amount, by like 7%. So he's just like selling out for a little more power. So even though it's not a real, like, he didn't pull it as much, he lifted it a little bit more. It's a guy who clearly knew that he could hit the ball harder and said, hey, I'm not going to try to make contact with everything. I'm going to try to actually like hit the ball hard. And so I believe a lot of this is earned. And so is he a 20 homer guy next year? Could he be 20, 25, 20, 30, almost hit 290? Like, there's some value there. And even if he goes back to what he was before, like, I think the 50 stolen bases from last year weren't fluky. He was just hitting the ball harder and getting more extra base hits and didn't need to steal as much. And so if the power doesn't repeat, I think the stolen bases will go back up as if he becomes more of a singles guy again. So I think there's kind of a relatively safe floor, and he's just going to be 26 years old. So technically, like, entering his athletic prime, his peak seasons. So there's an argument that that wasn't Bryce Terang's best year.
Yeah, no, I could understand that. And yeah, when you get a second base and you don't have one of the top two, three, you're going to have to fill in the blanks somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. You have to take some sort of step forward. For me, that was Jackson Holliday, but I waited too long. He went in the 12th round, and I should have gotten him in the 10th or 11th. I had to deal with Jorge Polanco in the 17th.
Love it.
Which is, you love it or you hate it?
No, I mean, I do like Jorge Polanco. I mean,
I don't, I mean, I didn't feel great about it. I don't think it's believable.
Second baseman, but I do like Jorge Polanco.
So it's just, you know, you really have to figure out, okay, these are the ones that if I'm not going for a top second baseman, am I going to go to the end? And then really just that is my plan for the season, is to figure out how to fill that hole, which happens every year. There are always guys in every position that surprise us, and that could be your game plan. It is just going into the draft. I know what that is. Yeah. Fifth round. I love this one. It's Vinny Pescantino. And I think he's going to be a target of mine in this coming year, because we knew his rookie year, he was an all around amazing hitter. He had a weird second season, much better this past year. Talk to me about Vinny P.
Yeah. I like the production I got from him. This is the part where I was debating going with a pitcher, with my first starting pitcher. And in hindsight, I kind of wish that I did, not through any fault of Vinny Pascantino's. Like, I, first of all, love him as a dude, like a father.
Oh, yeah.
And amazing. So happy to have people like that on my team. but like, yeah, 32 homers, 113 RBIs, like going to hit in the middle of what will be another solid, if, you know, not exceptional, but solid lineup. Production is good. I just think first base is really deep. And so now that I can look back and see the starting pitchers that went off the board before I picked, I don't love the ace I have, who we'll talk about later, as my ace. I mean, it makes me slightly uncomfortable. And I think like I could have waited on first base and picked, like, if I'm honestly, I'm looking back at our draft right now, and I don't even know if, like, Wilson Contreras was drafted. And like, I could have gotten Wilson Contreras in like the 20th round as my first baseman, and, you know, would have been pretty happy with that.
He was not drafted, as everyone can see on screen right now. He was not drafted at all.
I think that's a little bit of an oversight on all of our parts. But I just think first base is deep, and I like Vinny. I'm happy to get him in drafts. I just don't know that I would do this again by going for a first baseman over some of the starting pitchers based on how the board shifted.
Sure. And by the way, Wilson Contreras last year in about 560 plate appearances, 20 home runs, 80 RBI, 70 runs, 5 stolen bases, 257 average. I can understand why he didn't get drafted, simply because what we certainly do inside of a mock draft in October is, instead of the ones that we feel like are going to be the Toby of hitters, we just say, you know what, let's have some fun with our picks and go kind of wild. It's also something to be said about this draft. It really highlighted, based on the color coding that we are using. And by the way, it's the same color coding that we use for our live draft assistant. So if you're kind of curious about why shortstop are red and pitchers are blue, it's really helpful to actually separate pitchers from hitters. It's a very similar coding and everything. And you can see the sea of blue in the second half.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It is absolutely startling how much different the first six rounds are versus the next, you know, 10, 15 after that. And I think that really goes to say that Wilson Contreras wasn't drafted because bench spots are being filled with fewer and fewer hitters. They're being filled with pitchers because there's so much depth to that, where you feel that a larger necessity to go after that. I think that's part of the reason there. But yeah, Vinny P, fifth round. I'm cool with that. I kind of regretted my Freddie Freeman in the third, even though he's always just been a staple of, like, I get things. Things are good. He should be healthier next year, we hope. I really dug that Vinny P pick. Sixth round, I want to mention to everybody as we go to break, and we're not going to really talk about this guy, so I want to get him done before the break. Carlos Rodon went the sixth. It was before we knew he would be missing time.
Yes.
And it's that really changes this one. What I do want to ask, not really do too much analysis on Carlos Rodon. I think we kind of know that he's just a solid, good arm, new changeup, everything along those lines. It really changes how we do it, of course, for next year, because guys who enter the season injured have a lower chance of being the same and being as productive. If it's not like Tommy John or something like that, It's always weird. They get rushed back a little bit more, so on and so forth. But if you could redo this pick and take another starting pitcher on the board, and just to let everybody know, the next ones that were taken were Joe Ryan, Kyle Bradish, Jacob Mizorowski, Tyler Glasnow, Shota Imanaga, Logan Webb, and Michael King. Mm-hmm. Who would that be?
Well, I'm pulling up my rankings right now, and Bradish gone, Mizorowski,
Shane Bieber, Framber Valdez, Eury Pérez.
I have Blake Snell 15th, Michael King, and Kyle Bradish in the next tier. So those would have been the guys. It would have been
not Tyler Glasnow.
Would not have been Glasnow.
No. Okay. Not Joe Ryan.
No.
It would have been Blake Snell.
It would have been Blake Snell, or I would have talked myself into Michael King again as my ace.
There you go. And where should Carlos?
My hope was my hope was one of Hunter Green, Max Fried, George Kirby, or Cole Reagans was gonna make it around to me. Those four went in the eight picks before me. And I lost out on those guys, but I would have taken all of those had they fallen to me.
Yeah, I'm even looking at this now. It is really funny. The pitching runs that happened. The 14th round literally did not see a hitter. The 15th saw three of them. The 16th saw five. I mean, it's just, so many pitchers. It's wonderful. So we're going to take a look at your seventh and later picks as well, but we'll do that after this break. So seventh round, and this is something actually I am more accepting of in March in general. I don't know necessarily in October, is taking a reliever earlier than I usually do. Mm-hmm. Because I do recognize, especially in a head-to-head, if you don't have a de facto closer, you are just going to lose that every week. Yep. And if you look at a lot of your draft picks inside the top 10 rounds, there is always at least one who did not return that. However, if you know the good closers in February, March, the only reason they wouldn't give that value at that point is because of injury or your Devin Williams. So you went with Yoan Duran in the seventh round. And keep in mind, Edwin Diaz, Mason Miller, Andres Munoz were the only other closers taken at this point.
Yeah, I like taking a reliever early. I like taking one closer really before I start filling out my rotation, because I'm okay waiting on starters, but I don't want to play the closer waiver wire during the season. Mm-hmm. Don't want to do it. Hate doing it. I think it sucks. I think it is really hard to navigate. Also, in addition to just the baseball strategy of it, it's just not good for my mental health. And so I want to avoid it. I've had really good success in the last about 3 years of taking one locked in closer. Unfortunately, my locked in closer this year on about 75% of my teams was Emmanuel Clase. And that's something you can't predict. So that didn't work out for me for the final few months of the year, but it was working out just fine up until then. So I took Duran because, we know how good he is. We know how good he's been. He's no longer in Minnesota, where he's going to, be used for matchups and brought in the seventh or in the eighth or whatever. He was more often used as the surefire closer. The Phillies will again be one of the better teams in the NL. So I think the save totals will be there. And I just wanted to get a guy that I felt was a really strong, solid pitcher with a track record. And if you look at the closers that go after him, there's a lot of is Josh Hader healthy? Will Aroldis Chapman finally kind of fall off at, 50 years old? Can Cade Smith be a surefire closer? David Bednar, he's always had these implosions during the year. I just felt like he was the last of the surefire bets for me.
Yeah. I'm going to admit something to everybody. I cheated during this draft. I know I'm pointing this out there. I cheated. And it's because I went into Rick Graham's post as he was editing it before it was published to see his closer rankings. And it certainly changed my approach.
Yeah.
And anyone who has read Rick Graham's closer rankings knows how much of an advantage that is. So it is out right now for 2026. Yeah, obviously has Duran very high. I think he's a, he's one of the best ones. So actually, four seems right. As you were mentioning too, with the other question marks, and Duran should just be a rock that Philly needs very badly too.
Yeah. It's funny. You mention Rick, because his team is one of the teams is actually the team I like the most besides mine. And it's because he executed the strategy kind of how I would want to. Like I said, I wish I had gone starting pitching one round earlier in hindsight. He did, and wound up with Hunter Green. He also took one locked in closer. It was Mason Miller, who we assume will close for San Diego.
He's going to close. Really, I think also Mason Miller wants it to be closing, because he'll make more money and more consistency of making money in free agency.
Yes,
as a closer, because you won't destroy your arm.
And so that was like, oh, okay. Like that's basically somebody else executing the same plan I had, but doing something one round earlier that I had thought I might do one round earlier. Yeah. And so you're like, oh, that, okay, could have looked like that.
Absolutely. Eighth round comes, and this is 9 starting pitchers go in this round, but you're not one of them.
No.
You take Christian Yelich.
I did.
Why Yelich?
Again, I have this weird rejection of like pitcher, like all in a row. I just don't want to do it for some reason. Uh-huh. I kind of maybe wish that I had, because, you know, guys like Snell and Bieber went, who in hindsight, maybe I would take now. Also, my starting pitching rankings are final now. They were not when we were starting this draft. And so I don't know that I knew how high I'd wind up with Snell and Bieber.
So hold on a second. Because I remember you were like, Nick, I can't believe it. You took Bradish and Bieber.
Yeah.
How could you do this? And now it sounds like you have Bieber above Bradish, first of all.
I did at the time. I don't know if I do now.
Oh, okay. But I mean, like, you consider them both. I really want to hear this from you, Eric, specifically, of just your philosophy of guys like Bradish and Bieber versus a lot of the other rocks and anchors. Are you okay? Would you be okay with 1-2 being Bradish Bieber?
No.
And why is that?
I mean, would I be okay with it? Sure. It would make me a little nervous. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't not do it. Like if the value was there, I wouldn't pick somebody over them who I have ranked below over them because of my fear of that risk. But I would have preferred to get somebody who had completed a full season the year before. And additionally to that, those two guys, it's not just one injury and they're coming back from one injury. They have both battled some arm injuries over the last few years, which to me makes me feel like they're a little bit more of an elevated risk than like if you were just talking about like Hunter Green, who, you know, had some injuries last year, but isn't like somebody who has years.
That's an interesting one.
Arm issues.
I mean, so it's interesting with Hunter Green is 150 innings are pretty much the most he's thrown in a season. Mm-hmm. And yes, lower half injury. Yeah, we haven't seen the arm injury as much, right? It does, you know, seeing the chart of everybody, the top 10 velocities and everything, right? And I will say something that I am taking into 2026 is, it's really two factors that why I went for Bradish and Bieber is, one, it's the product of if injured guys are coming back, if they were successful in the previous season for not a full season, then that carries over more likely than just like Sandy showing up or McClanahan or whatever, right? But two, I'm drafting as much as I can guys who have already succeeded, right? Who have a track record of success already, as much as I can, because I keep looking back at my rankings in previous years of the frizzles, the ones in the 40s and 50s that I get really excited about. And a lot of them do hit for like a month or two, but it's so rare to see it for a full year, mm-hmm. right? Those breakout ones. And yes, those are the big money makers, all that kind of stuff. However, I am putting more and more weight on guys who are just consistently like, right, I am going to get, you know, 12, 14 wins and 350 ERA. Like, I have a good shot at doing that with a 115 whip or so. It is just something that is in my head these days of, right, Bradish and Bieber are guys who have done this constantly and like go six innings and should be very good on winning teams. And I find myself doing that more. I don't know if it's necessarily correct yet, but that is something I'm taking with me for now. I don't know. I'm undecided if I want to do Bradish Bieber is why I'm also asking you here, but enough about me. We're going to do another podcast about me. What am I doing here? I liked your ninth round pick. And that's Drew Rasmussen.
Thank you.
And I actually hadn't submitted my rankings fully yet. I kept going back and forth, and I hate that because I shouldn't give myself any time to go back and forth. I should just submit them and be done. And it can, you know, you just have to abandon a painting. And Drew Rasmussen is not going to be in George Steinbrenner fan. He's going to be in Tropicana. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that was part of the reason why you took Drew in the ninth.
Yeah, I'll just mention quickly on Yelich. Back surgery in August of 2024. And came out last year and looked far healthier. We saw the power come back a little bit, the barrel rate went back up again. And I think like that just made him healthier than we had seen him in the years past. And I think, you know, people don't realize like, you know, 29 homers, 16 steals, .264 batting average. Like he had a really solid year. He has played 145 games in three of the last 4 years. And so if I'm getting even at 34 years old, if I'm getting 145, 150 games from Christian Yelich, I think that's solid value in the eighth round. Again, in a three outfield league, I maybe wouldn't have done it, but a lot of other outfielders had gone and I like it. Rasmussen, you know, we talked about this on the rankings show. I like it. I know that he doesn't have a long track record of innings as a starter, but he's so efficient with his pitches when he's healthy that he's still a guy who normally goes like six innings in a start, even if he's not like, you know, pushing 190 innings by the end of the season. Like he's really good when he's on the mound. In my latest rankings, I do have Dylan Cease three spots ahead of him. Dylan Cease was drafted before Rasmussen in this draft.
After
is what I mean. Yes. After him truly. In this draft. And so I would have probably taken Dylan Cease over Rasmussen had this been done again. But I have Rasmussen ahead of pretty much all the other guys who went after. And I just feel like, you know, I'm getting a solid SP2. Again, everything changes now that I have drafted a starting pitcher one in Carlos Rodon, who is hurt, because I probably would have gone for somebody who throws more innings or is more of like 180, 190 inning guy with my second starter if I sure. had to do it over again.
Right. I mean, there weren't too many left at that point.
Yeah.
That was thing. I mean, we had once we got to, I think, Eury. We got fewer and fewer of the like, okay, this is a rock solid guy. Right. I mean, would you rather Ryan Pepiot over Rasmussen? Because theoretically, it's possible the Rays still baby Rasmussen. It's not like a complete set in stone that they're going to change it because it worked the last year.
I have Pepiot two spots behind Rasmussen. I have Sandy Alcantara one spot behind Rasmussen. Mm. So I would have taken Cease and then I would have thought about Pepiot or Alcantara. Alcantara is the play for the, hey, my SP1 is hurt and I need somebody who might throw 180, 190 innings.
Right.
You know, maybe that would have talked me into Alcantara, but I have Rasmussen higher than both. So,
yeah. And keep in mind, guys, I mean, I've said it over the years and I'll say it again. Innings on its own is not the thing. What Eric is really getting at is that those innings mean potential expression of more ERA and whip, and that could be good. And of course, hopefully that comes with the strikeout total and the win total, because that's a higher chance if you throw more innings. Yes. 10th round is Andy Páez. And did you know that Andy Páez had an incredible summer where his Process Plus rolling chart went up as high as about 135, 140. However, by the end of the year, by September 1st, he was below 100. How do you feel about Andy Páez? Do you feel that there's a good reason. I don't know anything about it.
I feel super optimistic about, this is his first full year in the majors, right? Because he was called up in the middle of last year from AAA and showed some flashes and struggled. And so his first full year in the majors, wearing down at the end of the year, starting to, you know, make some bad decisions as he was struggling. Like, to me, that's not a huge red flag. He's just 24 years old. Like, that kind of makes sense to me. Like, 24 years old, first full year in the big leagues, had a really good year, started to press a little bit as the team was struggling too. Like, the Dodgers went through a stretch where they were kind of cold offensively. And so a guy like Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts might not change what they're doing when things are going rough because they have years to fall back on of, sure, like, hey, I know what I'm doing.
Right.
A guy like Páez probably feels like he needs to press a little more. His playing time is not guaranteed, et cetera. But then you look up at the scope of the season for a 24-year-old in his first full year in the big leagues who plays for the Dodgers still, hitting 272 with 27 homers, 86 RBIs, 14 steals, with, you know, 8.4% barrel rate, so still hitting the ball relatively well, playing decent enough outfield. He had kind of looked really shaky at the beginning of the season, but had turned things around where he was actually graded out really above average at all of the outfield spots, and so that helps with the playing time purposes. And then, you know, contact rate improved from last year, zone contact rate improved from last year, swinging strike rate was down from last year. So I just saw a 24-year-old on arguably the best team in baseball making improvements, showing the potential to be like a 30-homer, 15-steal guy with a bunch of really strong hitters around him in the lineup. And I just thought that was an undervalued player at this point in the draft.
Yeah, it gets a seal of approval. Absolutely. Cool. I love this pick. Because also, if you look at the other outfielders at this point, it's starting to get very shaky.
Yeah, there are guys who might have higher upside. Like, if everything clicks for Lawrence Butler, who is like one of the next outfielders off the board, like, sure, he could be better than Andy Páez, but we also have seen him be much worse.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Andy Páez has already been a very good, productive outfielder.
Right.
And now he's going to be 25 in the Dodgers. Like, it's good. I mean, I will mention, there's something I think about a ton about just the mental aspect of it. Alex Thinkfast has arrived. And when it comes to hitting, really, to me, the mental aspect is just discipline and consistency and just not, you know, not changing, you know, as much as you can. As you talked about it with Betts and Freeman, just like, I know what to do. I'm here with it. And the thing is, when you have such a good run for a while, right, and Andy Páez was as hot as anyone, and then you fall so hard, it is a little concerning that is how it's always going to be. This, like, I'm in the moment. I'm not, you know. As opposed to someone that you see kind of go up, down throughout the year, which is normal. So to see giant spikes and giant valleys is more concerning about the headspace of, are you able to be the same thing with consistency? Mm-hmm. But then again, he's 24. I mean, come on. I can't expect him to have that now. I'm sure that he has that in there. It was just, you know, it's not easy. So I love this pick. And I do want to give a seal of approval in seventh round, Johan Duran as well. I thought that was beautiful. Great pick. So I didn't give it then. I forgot about seals of approval, guys. And almost gave one to Vinny, but, you know, it's the fifth round. I can't really do it, but it's pretty good.
That's fine.
That's fine. All right. We have another starting pitcher. Finally, 11th round. It's Robbie Ray.
Yeah.
Okay. So are you feeling shaky at this point with Robbie Ray? Cause he certainly made us feel shaky in September.
Yeah, I am. But again, in the 11th round, I'm starting to feel less shaky. You know, I have him 33rd in my rankings. So to get him in the 11th round felt good based on value. You sniped me on Pepio, the pick right before.
What's up?
I would have taken him there.
Pepio. I knew that.
And then, you know, you look at the guys afterwards, like Sonny Gray, Kevin Gausman. Like, again, we're talking about my rankings are now finalized. I have Sandy Alcantara ranked over Robbie Ray. Sandy Alcantara went two rounds after. I might have taken Sandy here. I probably would take Sandy here if I did this all over again. But, you know, you've got like Sonny Gray, Gausman, Luis Castillo, Jack Flaherty, Aaron Nola. Like, those are the levels of guys that are that went after Robbie Ray. And I would just rather chase the upside that I think I'm getting in Robbie Ray over those guys who I think are kind of like later career solid, but don't possess that strikeout upside I really want.
Mm, yeah. It really gets tough. I felt that Pepio was the last one that I felt, okay. All right. And I always say you need to have four guys. It's why I do a starter run like I do. With Robbie Ray, it's, I can't express it. Like, watching Robbie Ray is one of the more frustrating things, because on one hand, he throws so many fastballs at times and sometimes they actually works, but it always feels like a grind.
Mm-hmm.
Every single start, and you don't get those games of just, he's untouchable, you know? And yeah, that to me is, it's disheartening to say the least. Sure. And you generally the rule of thumb is, if you are captain your upside, and to make this pick work, he has to be what he was, as opposed to what he was last year is fine. And there's room for more. I always move away from that, right? Because it's either I'm fine with this pick or I'm not happy with it, instead of I'm thrilled about it, right? That said, yeah, it's really like we've gotten to this point of Cade Horton. I mean, I like it, but
right,
either way with that
there's
one.
You know? Nobody went afterwards other than your pick of Pablo Lopez, who we now have more information that he was probably healthier at the end of the season than we thought. But there's nobody who went after that I'm like, oh man, that was a big
miss. Yeah. Like, I have him in the same tier as Nick Lodolo.
Who?
And Nick Lodolo.
No, who do you have in the same tier? Robbie Ray. Yeah. I actually have Nick Lodolo one spot higher than Robbie Ray.
Right. This is actually what I'm getting at. So that's the other guy, is my point.
Yeah.
Is I could see myself going Nick Lodolo instead.
I could too. I had Nick Lodolo higher, and I was gonna do it, and I was like, this seems early for Nick Lodolo.
And yeah, right. Technically was 13th round or something like that.
Yeah.
You could even argue the guy that you picked in the 12th round, we're gonna tell you who that is after this break. So who is the guy that Eric took? Well, he took Bubba Chandler, and actually we were waiting for his pick, and I added the channel saying, Eric, it's your pick, just take Bubba already. And then he took Bubba Chandler.
Yeah.
And would you have Bubba Chandler over Robbie Ray now?
I do not right now, but I have him one spot. I basically have this tier that I've called volatile starters with clear upside. And the top three guys in the tier are veterans. It's Pepio, Lodolo, and Ray. And the bottom four guys in the tier are young guys. It's Bubba Chandler, Cam Schlittler, Nolan McLean, and Chase Burns. Mm. And I don't really know that that's like how I would pick them. I just put the veterans first and then the younger guys after. They're all in that same tier. And I think it would be like, depending on how the draft went for me, am I going with the guy with a little bit more experience, or am I rolling the dice on somebody with less experience? And so, yeah, I have those guys back to back. I don't know that I would always take Robbie Ray over Bubba Chandler. I'm a believer in Bubba Chandler. And so, yeah, I was happy to get him here. I felt good about, like, okay, now I wound up I have four starters who are ranked inside of my top 35 starters. And so I feel like I haven't waited too long, and I haven't filled my roster with a bunch of guys from like the tier of like, oh man, I really hope this works out.
I just actually, it's just so interesting. I've been talking about this philosophy I have of, I need to see a guy do it first. And I really don't want to follow that rule for Bubba Chandler. Actually, in my drafts, I have Chase Burns ahead of him because we saw Chase Burns go three games straight of 10 strikeouts. Like, we saw that. We saw Bubba Chandler do it, but like for a smaller amount, you know, like, yeah, that four seamer command was so good, but not that long of a sample. And it's just, I want to be so in on Bubba, and we still just don't quite know what he's allowed to do, what he's capable of, all of that. And that made me realize that I just looked at my entire pitching staff. I don't have a single rookie. I don't have a single sophomore pitcher. And the only one I have, I guess, is Andrew Painter, but I took a 22nd round just for the heck of it. But it's like Merrill Kelly and Seth Lugo and Gerrit Cole and Shane McClanahan and Pablo Lopez.
You know? And we'll talk about this when we do your, but I was surprised how many older veteran pitchers you took at the end.
Right. And because this is the rule that I realized. I looked at this season of the guys who were drafted after like the top 40 starting pitchers, who were the ones that really were productive. And I'm not talking about necessarily player rater, because player rater is not a really good thing to necessarily chase. It's more about who were the kind of guys that you had, and then they stuck and were constantly productive. Mm-hmm. They were those older swatches, the volume ratio guys, right?
But those are the guys that you're probably able to get on waiver wires a little bit more.
Very true. And that's the thing. That's the argument that I've made for years, saying that if you want a Toby, I'll give you a Toby.
Right.
At the same time, I realized that the hit rate is higher for those. And if I can just get that and not have to, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to chase upside. And I was discrediting the upside of the volume guy. I was discrediting it too much in favor of the electric strikeout arm. And Merrill Kelly, Seth Lugo were phenomenal. Save for Lugo getting hurt at the end of the year and he had this terrible month. I was like, what is going on? But to me, I just go, wait a second. Like that is better than the guy we get really excited about. But then it's like 2 months and he has his bad start and we don't really know what's going on. It can actually turn into, I don't know what to do. I try to advertise it as, no, you're making quick decisions, move on or not. But mm-hmm. the young, exciting ones, it can be really hard to drop them.
Yeah.
And with Lugo and Kelly, it's like, oh, they have like two terrible starts and it looks really bad. Like, yeah, just go. Like, okay. But generally, they just normally figure it out and it's fine and you're good. So I'd rather chase that upside is what I'm getting at than there's a loose chance that this guy makes it, you know?
Sure.
Right. And that's what I'm starting to do. So I know it might be weird and I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but this is a pendulum swing I'm having right now and it might be the right level. We'll see. And I hope Bubba Chandler is amazing. I mean, he should be amazing.
I hope so too.
He should be so good. Chandler Simpson follows and I was really upset that there isn't a Simpson player because you have Bubba Chandler Simpson right now.
Yeah, this was a little bit of a roto pick in a head-to-head format where, like, I like Chandler Simpson for batting average and steals and felt like that was a good get here in the 13th round. And in a head-to-head league, it's not as important to get that. But I do think that Chandler Simpson is a little bit undervalued in people say, oh, he's just a rabbit. And it's like, well, he kind of is, but also he has a high batting average and the Rays started to hit him leadoff for a while. And if he is a leadoff hitter in Tampa Bay, who's going to run like that, who's going to also hit 280, 290, that's a valuable player.
Yeah. You're going to get runs as well. So it's essentially you sacrificing RBI and home run.
In this format, I might not have done it again, especially only a three outfielder format as well.
So there is some value to say like, all right, this is actually a bench bat that if I'm behind in stolen bases and I'm ahead on other stuff, I can swap in. There is some value to that. Absolutely.
No drafting. I mean, having Suarez, having Ellie De La Cruz and Bryce Terang means I didn't really need to do this, but what do you
think? There it is. You have Edward Cabrera next. Shocking. More at 11. Eric Samulski likes Edward Cabrera.
Yeah. 14th round. I'm going to do it. Why not?
Yeah. Okay. Fair. I mean, that's pretty straightforward. Again, also, yeah, go ahead.
Same thing again, like hindsight. And this may be, you know, as we get closer, my tier of injury guys, I have like Edward Cabrera, Bryce Miller, Treya Savage, like right ahead of my tier of injury guys, like Rodon and Schwellenbach and Pablo Lopez and, you know, McClanahan and Jared Jones and Grayson Rodriguez. And it's like when we get closer to the season, I doubt that's going to be the case. Like somebody like Pablo Lopez, I'm going to be drafting ahead. If we get more information that he's healthy, he's going to go ahead. And so there's a whole chunk of starting pitchers who ended the year hurt, who I don't have information on right now, who I drafted Edward Cabrera over, who might leapfrog him 3 months time. And so, but I like Edward Cabrera. I'm happy to take him. And so he's on my team.
So there's a conversation that I love to have, which is about consistency start to start. And if you're watching the playoffs right now, you kind of realize that the starting pitchers are generally pitching better than they usually do.
Right.
And what that means is they are hitting their edges more often. They're making fewer mistake pitches because they recognize, like, okay, if I make a mistake, that's the end of the series, and they're more careful and everything like that. And what it really comes down to for me is, who are the pitchers that are executing a game plan more often than others, right? This is something I talk about a bit, and not necessarily of the Joe Boyles thrower, not pitcher, but also with someone like Zebby Matthews, who, even though he throws strikes, it's not really commanded inside the zone as well as you want it to be. And it's part of the reason why he gets hit as much as he does. And with Ever Cabrera, it drives me up the wall because he does not execute a consistent game plan. Mm-hmm. You watch him pitch and he's not that kind of arm. He got far more success than we all expected last year. He did make the adjustments that we were hoping for, and that certainly led to it and all of it. I find myself hesitating to chase Edward Cabrera because it doesn't surprise me that he just does not have a good day, right? And it could fall apart quickly. Yeah. That's just like an innate internal, feeling of it. And also, yeah, this is the season for him to have his best season ever after everything he went through last year in development and got better and better and made those right adjustments. So the ceiling is certainly there. This is really just more of a question of, in general, that philosophy and trying to identify which pitchers are the ones who you watch them and go, right, you don't feel confident that they're going right to get this guy out.
And potential trained candidate. So we'll see.
Oh, yeah.
Where he actually pitches.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, Miami as a defense did get better in like the second half or so. And I wasn't giving them credit for that before. But still, you do want to get out of Miami. Kyle Finnegan shows up 15th round.
Yeah.
You got to go for a second reliever at some point.
You do. And he was really good with the Tigers. And so we just were at the point of the draft where, I think he is a solid closer. And I don't know where it's going to be. But yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, you really want to go for closers about this time. I always say, when you don't know what pick to make, you get a closer.
Yep.
And that's from Ben Dean, my old
Jeff friend. Hoffman right before me. And so
yeah, I know. I felt so lucky seeing that. I saw it. Actually, that was where I went against Rick. I went through all of the what I did do though is I went through his article, which, by the way, if you haven't checked out Rick Graham's closer article yet, you'll be surprised what you're gonna find. It's not just a ranking table. I asked Rick to go through every single team's bullpen situation. And then at the end of that, have the ranking. And so what I did is I went through all the bullpen situations and I was trying to find the ones who I felt were locks for the pen and had good strikeout upside, right? Mm-hmm. And Jeff Hoffman fit the bill. He actually had Hoffman lower than others. And I'm sure there are other reasons that I just wasn't, I didn't grasp at that time. But I was like, oh yeah, Jeff Hoffman, 100%. I'm going to take that over some other, like, I don't really love this thing. Hoffman, 100%. And then love that I snipped you again.
I was debating Hoffman, Finnegan, and Jose Ferrer, the guy from the Nationals who looked good and might be their closer. And, but I went with Finnegan and crossed my fingers. We'll see where he goes.
Now, Joe Musgrove, 16th round. I do wonder where he is going to end up, because Joe Musgrove to me was someone who was battling to be like a Holly, right? He was really just trying to keep his head above water doing that. Whip was going up higher. His strikeout numbers, 22%, 23%, grinding for six, right? Oh man, what's wrong with his slider right now? What's up with this? What's up with that? Now he did get Tommy John, and that might have actually fixed some of it, because it could have been elbow pain. It could have been his body saying no to let him do those things. We don't know. But the thing is, he didn't play right in 2025. So how do you feel about him?
This is just straight up, like, I've always liked Musgrove. And I just put him in the tier of the injured starters who, and so I drafted based on the tier, but like, he doesn't really belong in a tier with Spencer Schwellenbach, Pablo Lopez, Chris Bubich, like Carlos Rodon,
right?
Shane McClanahan. But he's in that tier because he was hurt last year and he's a starting pitcher I like who was hurt. He's not right. Like, I have another tier that's further down of guys who
are going to be delayed into the season, I imagine.
Right. Well, yeah, guys who are hurt in, like, you know, more of like a Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns, Jackson Jobe kind of way. Yeah, where it's like, yep. I don't really know how you're going to start. Right. So I think that, like, some of those other guys will rise higher and Musgrove will probably stay lower. And so I don't know that I'd make this pick in hindsight, but I like Joe Musgrove and I'm hopeful that he pitches well this year.
So, I think the argument here for Joe Musgrove over McClanahan is that McClanahan, it's a weird thing of, okay, you say that you're going to be fine for spring training, but are you? And this is going to be a headache through the entire year. Well, at least Musgrove is like, I'm coming back from Tommy John.
Right.
This should be smoother.
And in I would pretty much, like, I look back at this and it's like, I would take McClanahan over Musgrove. I would take Eovaldi
over Musgrove. Eovaldi is one that I just go, oh, dang it.
Right.
Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. Like Grayson Rodriguez, I would probably have taken Grayson Rodriguez over Musgrove. Mm-hmm. But again, the same thing, like that was weird. Like that was multiple injuries and the Orioles weren't like really honest about it. And
Grayson is a strange one. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, I think a lot of us have forgotten about Grayson. I certainly have a bit. We're going to go to the 17th round now. And I know we're going a bit long in this podcast, but I have a hard out soon enough. So Brian Reynolds, you just make it on a return for Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, I just think it's the 17th round. Yeah. He's been too consistent for long enough. I just felt like it was worth taking him. I hate my 18th round pick, and if we want to skip it, I'm totally
fine. No. Why do you hate your 18th round pick, which is Xavier Edwards?
I didn't need speed. You know, we just talked about like the Chandler Simpson thing. Right. I didn't need batting average and speed. I just kind of did that with Chandler Simpson. I wanted a middle infielder. Adames and Colson, I didn't need a starter, so it was kind of like looking for a backup.
Well, you drafted only seven starters.
What do you mean?
Only seven starting pitchers.
Oh, I mean, I didn't need, because isn't it six? In my head, I'm doing six starting pitchers and three relievers.
That's fine, but then what's your bench look like?
Figure it out. I mean, this felt like,
I mean, also one of those six starting pitchers, seven starting pitchers is Joe Musgrove.
This felt like fewer picks than I am, fewer rounds than I remembered, fewer rounds than I'm used to. So I think I thought we weren't like drafting full benches here.
And by the way, guys, I made this very clear. I had a big Discord post showcasing all the rules and everything reminded. So this is all Eric. Okay. Also, I did everything I could. I
wasn't keeping track of my roster on like a separate document. I was just looking at the colors and seeing what I had. And so, yeah, like, but I probably would have taken another starting pitcher over somebody we'll talk about later. The Xavier Edwards thing was I wanted a backup middle infielder. Adames and Montgomery went. And then I took Xavier Edwards, but I hate it. Like I would have rather had Dansby Swanson. Jordan Lawler's not going to be middle infield eligible next year, I don't believe, but I did kind of like that pick. It's a bad pick. I don't need to, you know, belabor the point.
Jonah Tong went in the 19th round. So you got another starter. But the thing is Jonah Tong going to start for the Mets?
I don't know. But I we're doing this in October.
Right.
And I liked the upside of Jonah Tong. Again, having finished my rankings now after doing this, there are guys I have ranked above Jonah Tong. Seth Lugo, Chris Bubich, Ryan Weathers. Those are all guys I have above Jonah Tong who I would have taken over Jonah Tong if we were doing this again. But in my head, I had filled out my starting rotation. Sure. Right. I filled out my starting rotation, even though, as you pointed out, Joe Musgrove really probably shouldn't be penciled into my starting rotation.
Well, it's actually kind of funny, Eric, you could have right as of right now, three pitchers who are part of the rotation on opening day. Three starters, theoretically. If Musgrove is still hurt, Jonah Tong doesn't make it, and we already have Rodon out.
Yeah.
So that's Rasmussen, Ray. Oh yeah, and Chandler has to make, obviously, there might be some shenanigans there too.
I'll quit fantasy baseball.
No, don't say that, Eric. We're gonna. Oh gosh, Eric, please stay with us.
If the Pirates are, if the Pirates for no injury are just like, oh, we're just gonna start him at AAA. I'm just like, I'm done with this whole thing.
Yeah, they could.
It's done.
They could. They have a lot of. Listen,
this is a good example of why you need to really track your roster as you're drafting. On a separate.
All right. So you did track that you didn't have a catcher. And by the way, Jonah Tong, he's a fastball split change guy, really a Vulcan splitter. I generally don't love chasing those kind of guys. However, I think Jonah Tong's fastball is a very good one. And that should be good enough. But not having that third pitch like Trey Savage does for righties, that slider, that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel a lot more confident about Trey going six innings more often. While Jonah Tong is going to have those good and bad days.
Huge leap forward for Tong this year. I'm expecting work being done in the offseason to address a lot of those things.
Absolutely. 100%.
The catcher thing, it's a one catcher league. I was always gonna wait. I wanted Drake Baldwin. He kept falling until he stopped falling three picks before me, or four picks before me. But I took Yiner Diaz. I think Yiner Diaz had a down year. But we were drafting him as like a top five or six catcher last year. And now I got him in the 20th round in a Houston lineup that should be healthy and strong next year. And so I had no problem with that as my catcher.
Yeah, it makes me regret a lot Ben Rice in the 9th round as my catcher. I know, I do too. But it's just, I mean, you have Salvador Perez going in the 19th.
Yeah, in the 19th.
Herrera going in the 13th. Alejandro Kirk in the 20th. Samuel Basalo going in the 22nd. Like, I could have done better with mine. Mm. And then you have a Bryce Eldridge, big power bat, big strikeout bat. First base, but it's a 21st round. Like you go for those.
This is the, hoping it picks it. I was in the, I'm throwing darts at big upside players. But we'll talk about my last round pick who I was always planning to take in the last round. And so this is the pick that should have been a pitcher, like just from a strategy standpoint, it should have been another starting pitcher. But I really do think Bryce Eldridge, like his power is very legit and he may be a 240 hitter, at least in this portion of his career. But I think he'll be a 240 hitter in a good lineup with real power. And, you know, the question is just, will he make the roster on opening day? And I wonder, I do think a component of that is how well he plays. And another component of that is Rafael Devers, who we just saw last offseason, didn't like being told he wasn't going to play the field.
Right.
And so if the Giants want Bryce Eldridge to be their first baseman, is it going to be the same situation all over again for Rafael Devers? If it is, are the Giants going to call up their top prospect Bryce Eldridge and make him just DH? Like what there are some things to consider there.
Absolutely. And by the way, I should also mention Jacques Caglioni also went in the 19th round for catchers. So it's just, oh my gosh. Jordan Leisure, you decided to go with the Chicago White Sox closer.
Is he? You know. Maybe. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, right. The potential one because Grant Taylor went later on and we kind of hope that Grant Taylor would get a shot to start. I mean, I just think that there's so much there.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that Grant Taylor is a starter, but we don't really know. But Jordan Leisure was somebody that I was kind of into, you know, when he was first coming up a little bit, had a pretty solid second half while he was closing for them. I think there's strikeout upside. I don't know how good or bad the White Sox are going to be. Like there are some intriguing prospects on that team. And depending on when they get there, like it could be a team that actually has a pretty solid, like second, maybe they're like good, bad at the start of next year. And then are kind of like, fun and trending up in the second half of the year. Yeah. And so who knows, like, when do we get Hagen Smith? Like, you know, Noah when do Schultz, those guys join the rotation? Schultz, when do we see, you know, I guess we get a full season from Kyle Teal. You know, we're getting a full season from, you know, some of these other prospects who came up at the end of the year. So, you know, who knows?
All right. And then last pick is the one you knew you were going to take.
I knew I was going to take Kazuma Okamoto, the Japanese corner infielder. And then in like the 19th round, there was like that report from Mike Rodriguez who was like, he's not going to be posted. And I was like,
yeah, what? Right.
He was going to be. And then right in my, like while I was picking in the 23rd round, they were like, oh, he's going to be posted. And I was like, all right, well, I'm obviously taking him. I think that, like, I know that Munetaka Murakami gets more publicity. I think Okamoto's going to be better. He is 29 years old versus 25, so he's a little bit older. If you're talking about, like, I think Murakami gets a bigger contract. But Okamoto is a better defender. He can play third and first well enough. And he has very legit pull-side power. And there are, you know, all the accounts who do the NPB stats on Twitter, like, you know, the Japanese baseball stats, have broken down, like, you know, Murakami really struggles against high velocity fastballs, like 93 miles an hour and above. And in Japan, Okamoto was a 290 hitter off fastballs that are 93 and over with good power numbers. And so he might not struggle with velocity. The pull side power is something that I think can translate. And so I think that he could be somebody who, like, is a really good corner infield target in drafts next year. We'll see where he signs. We'll see if he's a starter, all that kind of stuff. But I he's somebody I'm certain I'm, like, really watching pretty intently in the offseason.
No, that's a seal of approval easily for that one. I love that pick a ton. And that is your draft, Eric Samulski. Okay. And before I let you go, I have some critical questions. Okay. What is the biggest lesson of the draft for you, Eric?
Write down your roster on a separate sheet of paper so you know the positions you need to draft.
Absolutely. Who were your favorite players left on the board?
We talked about, like, Wilson Contreras, I think, is just somebody who needed to be drafted and wasn't drafted. I don't really know anybody else. I will say, like,
how dare you say that? Because
Homer Giolito. What?
Lucas Giolito.
Oh, I was going to say Homer shout out to Marcelo Mayer, who may start next season as the starting third baseman for the Red Sox.
Yeah, there you go.
And
right.
Again, was like a really solid prospect and should be healthy to start the year. And then I don't think Brian Bayo got drafted.
Yeah, he did in the end of the beginning of the second 22nd round. Okay.
Corbin Burns wasn't drafted. And that's an interesting one because, like, Zach Wheeler was drafted in the 14th round, but Corbin Burns wasn't drafted. But I think we see Corbin Burns before we see Zach Wheeler.
Well, it's unknown.
But I don't know.
It's unknown because there was something saying about him returning before June, Zach Wheeler, and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. Yeah, it's very strange with his, he has the best version of TOS that you could get, essentially, which is the Merrill Kelly one that we always say. And
sure. Yeah.
We don't know. I always end these with a question. You have 23 rounds here. So on a scale of 1 to 23, Eric, how do you like your team?
Let's go 16.
Oh, that's pretty high relatively
to
what you were saying about your team. Generally, we get a 16, 17 on that.
Okay. I liked a handful of my, like, I really liked a handful of my picks. I felt fine about a handful of my picks and I felt I didn't like some of my picks. And so it kind of feels like it's, you know, maybe you're coming like 14 or 15, I guess, if I'm being more accurate.
Okay. That sounds about right. That sounds good. Yeah. Eric Samulski, congratulations. You made it through your mock draft in review.
First one, because we didn't do this podcast last year. We just forgot to. So
no, man.
One I've broken down with you.
Wow. I'm excited for you to roast mine.
Can't wait.
And we'll be doing that. And of course, we'll also be doing the later targets that we talked about in our previous podcast. So we'll give you guys that as well, as we do not go dark in this offseason. It'll be slower.
We don't.
But we do not go dark
behind me in this room right now.
It is. It is very dark. You got to fix that. I know. Natural light is going away, Eric.
Natural light is, the sun has gone behind the building. The natural light has gone down.
Yeah, we got 2 months until the solstice. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, so get ready for that. But everybody listening, thank you so much for joining us today. I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I am Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
And I'm going to go make some better draft picks.